say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be. You need another.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo, and oh, wow, do we have a great show again. Again. Yeah, Brand Renegades. You know this maverick. When he saw the title of this book, said, send it to me, and I want to get them on the show immediately. And guess what they did? They came on the show immediately, and guess who's with me? Yeah, the tattooed millionaire, the founder of, yeah, you know what? Club Tattoo. Wow. He's awesome. The book is brilliant. He's brilliant. His wife is brilliant. And they have not only a great story, they're going to help you. I am telling you, Sean Dowdell is going to help you today with your business. He's going to help you build your brand. He's going to help you with your marketing. He's going to help you understand how to have the right partnership. He is going to help you understand how to have the right entrepreneurial mindset when it comes to building your brand, building your business, and becoming a brand renegade. Wow, the book is fantastic. He's fantastic. But before we get to him and his fantasticness, right? Let's do what we do every week, right? I walk you through the four areas of your life. Look, we are four-part people, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people. And we need to be in constant training. We need to be in constant growth in those four areas of our life. Because here's the truth, folks. If we're not growing, we are dying. That's just as simple as that. Nothing stays static. Matter of fact, I think what Sean will tell you is it, the same principle applies to your business. If you aren't constantly thinking about how to add value, oh, actually, he says that in the book. If you're not thinking about how to add value, you're not growing anymore. You have got to be in a constant stage of growth. Our life is no different. Whether it's physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual part of our life, we have got to be in constant growth. So let's take a look at four areas. This is how it works, right? So we go on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is miserable in terms of growth. 10 is my growth is outstanding, right? So we're going to talk about physically. Just where are you at in the last 7 days? How would you evaluate yourself out there, right? So like physically, things like, are you eating right? Are you drinking enough water? Are you getting enough sleep? How's your exercise regimen, right? How would you out there evaluate? What number would you give yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 5 being average? Now, what it's not important what that number actually is. What is important is whatever that number is, it is. How do we improve it to the next number? Does it mean that you know, we have to work out a little bit more? Do I need to take extra walks? Do I need to walk the dog a few more times? Do I need to get my hand out of the bag of chips? Do I need to stop the sodas? You know, does it mean I need to get to bed earlier? Does it mean I need to maybe sleep a little later? Does it mean I need to drink more water? Do I need to cut out some drinks that I shouldn't be drinking? Whatever it may be, there's things that you could do right now to improve that part of your life. So what is that number on a scale of 1 to 10? All right, you got it? All right, perfect. So that's your first number. Second number is the mental number, right? And here's the thing. And here's the thing I love about Sean and the book and Incorporate. Sean is a reader because throughout the course of this book, there's clearly people he has read that he's taking their ideas from, right? That's active mental growth, right? He's not letting things just come at him. He's actively mentally and mentally challenging himself on a daily basis to make sure that what he's doing is he's growing mentally. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say your mental growth is, right? You got 5 being average, right? And what can you do to improve it? You know, you could read. I would start with this book, I think, as a great way to improve your mental game. Okay. Right? Okay, you got 2 numbers, right? Physical, mental, emotional. Emotional number, well, we divide that up into 2 areas, right? Emotionally, what we do, and by the way, Sean, it talks about this in his book too, because he had, I've had to work with my wife in her business, all right? He works with his wife in his business. It's not always easy. You got to have some emotional intelligence. You have to have a high emotional quotient if you're going to be able to deal with that. What does that look like? Well, the first thing it looks like is how well are you able to control your emotions under stress or when you're exhausted or when you're hungry? That's the first part of the emotional growth. Right? It's controlling your own emotions, right? And by the way, Sean didn't do this perfect. I didn't do it perfect. Sean didn't do it perfect either, right? Matter of fact, they both talked about in the book that still could be a struggle from time to time. So it's not about perfection, okay? It's about growth, right? Okay, so how well are you able to control your emotions under pressure, stress, and hunger, right? And then the second piece of that is how well are you able to understand, right, the emotions of another person, right? I mean, truly understand them. And tap into those emotions. Right. I think one of the things that Sean and Thora talk about so beautifully in this book is that they had to, they use the word having to stay in your own lane. You know, understanding their partner enough, well enough to understand that they got to stay in their emotional lane and understanding their strengths and that they bring different strengths to the table. And that's not always congruent with who they are. And I think that's the beautiful thing about their relationship. And I think the beautiful thing about any relationship is you understand the emotions of another person and understand how they tick and understand how they work, so that you can work together. See, that's emotional. That's emotional growth. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you evaluate yourself emotionally? All right? Got it? Okay, final is the spiritual aspect. And a lot of people will say, well, I'm not spiritual. We're all spiritual. We all have faith in something. I mean, if you want to ask Sean about spirituality, you could ask him, you know, and he would say, listen, you know what? We took some steps of faith. We didn't know how it was going to work out, but we believed in it enough that we believed it was going to work. That's spiritualism, right? What do you have faith in? And people have faith. Listen, what brings you back to center? What brings you back to a state of calm? What brings you back in the midst of chaos back to centeredness? I think Sean would tell you really quickly that his music, right, because he's a drummer and with Grey Days and has been, and as a musician, I think he would probably tell you that there's a spiritual thing that happens with music. I have never seen a drummer yet that I've either played with in a band or that I've seen on stage who doesn't have some sort of a spiritual experience where he's just connected to the beat and connected to the music. It's spiritual, right? Now, listen, there's a lot of ways that people get their, you know, get their spiritual work. Some people believe in God. Some people believe in nature. Some people believe in meditation. Whatever that may be, right? There's two questions I want to ask you. One, is it working for you, right? And then second thing is, what do you need to do to change it? And what can you do to activate it, all right, so that you are in a spiritual center place? And that's your fourth number. And those four numbers are like the legs of a chair. And here's the thing. The legs of the chair, if you want to be stable, right, we need to kind of get them up, bring them up at the same level, right? Because if they're off kilter, it hurts our posture. And if, by the same token, if the chair of the legs are too low, right, what do we know? Well, we know that we can't sit at a normal table and eat, and we have to have other people help us to get there. Speaking of someone who's got his legs all together and at the right level, his name is Sean Dowdell. He is known as the Tattooed Millionaire, which is also the title of his first book back in 2017. In addition to his role as founder and CEO of Club Tattoo, he is a drummer with Grey Days, which I talked about. He is a frequent speaker to a variety of audiences and has been featured in Entrepreneur Magazine, GQ, Billboard, and on CNBC, A&E, and more. Thora Dowdell, his wife of 22 years, was formerly in the marketing and sales industry before becoming a business partner with Sean. Initially in the music recording industry and later in Club Tattoo, Thora is passionate about empowering women business owners through her story. And hopefully she wished she could be here. She couldn't, unfortunately. Together, as a husband and wife team, they have authored this new book called Brand Renegades, Our Fearless Path from Startup to Global Brand. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome to A New Direction, Sean Dowdell. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks for having me on today, Jay. That was one fantastic intro, man.
Thank you.
I hope I live up to it.
I have no doubt in my mind that you are going to more than live up to it. So I am glad that you're with us on the show, and I am so pleased to have you on, and I loved this book. Let's just dig right in to the book, if you don't mind, and let's just roll with it and talk about it, because I want to talk about the introduction, because I think, you know, when people think about what you do, they go, well, I don't see how any of that can apply to me. But the truth is, right away in the introduction, you say something that I think is really important, and I just want the listener to hear it. And here's, it's called What to Expect. And one of the things that you come right out of the blocks is you say, we wrote this book for entrepreneurs who need a little advice and encouragement, who need to see that others have gone through and overcome similar challenges of building their businesses and brands. Our purpose for writing this book is to offer real-world experience that will that it can be understood quickly, and to offer lessons and solutions that can be applied to your own small business brand. And we want to give hope when things get tough. That's kind of a beautiful introduction to a purpose to write a book. Everything I read in this book just says how sincere you are about that. So are you helping entrepreneurs now? I mean, is that also part of your business model?
It's kind of how this whole book writing thing happened as the success of the business and other ventures kind of took shape. I'd have a lot of young business people coming up and asking me questions, and basically, want me to help mentor their business paths and their journey. And that's really where it started from, was helping other people. And it's always been a passion of mine and Thora's to help other business people, not even just business people, just help others in their life in general. It really feels good to give back and feel like a contribution to the world we live in rather than a taker. You know, that's just really where my mindset's been for a long time.
You talk about chapter one, that, and it's called Our Brand Renegade Story. You've been married to Thora for 22 years. Is that right? Is it 22 or is it going on 23?
23 years. Okay. Been together 24, married 23.
And you have two sons, Brennan and Karsten.
Yes, sir.
Which I hope they're listening somewhere out there watching. Here's the thing that you talk about each other. You said, we are two uniquely passionate, motivated, opinionated people who bring different perspectives, temperaments, and skill sets to the business and marriage. I think a lot of people would be saying, I don't know, I want to work with my spouse, but you guys have figured it out.
Well, you know, first, let me give you a disclaimer. I do not recommend it for most people because I'm serious. Early on, it was really a recipe for divorce because we didn't understand how to work together in a coherent way where we could listen to the other person's point of view without getting angry and upset. And as a young person, I did not have those emotions in check that you alluded to a little bit earlier in the broadcast. So I don't recommend this for most people. It takes a very special set of people, not person, set of people to be able to work dynamically the way we've gotten to. Right. However, that being said, if you can find the right partner and become the right partner in that business model, then it can exponentially pay off in ways that I don't think most people can wrap their head around as well. Not only do we have a strong business, but our marriage is super strong because of it as well.
So that's a great, you know, you are so good about segueing me into where I want to go. That was awesome, by the way. So yeah, that was good. Good for you, man. So chapter three is understanding what makes a partner tick. Now you have not always had good partners. I mean, let's just be completely honest there. After reading your story in Brand Renegades, by the way, available Amazon bookstores near you, partners have not always been good. And so let's understand what makes a partner tick. You say having a good partner comes down to one thing, not depending on your partner to make you happy. Happiness comes within yourself, and great partnership is all about becoming a better partner, not getting a better partner. But let's talk about a cautionary tale, Sean's long road to a successful partnership. You say know your why and theirs. So let's start there and let's talk through what it takes to have a good partner.
So first I'm going to throw up a premise, and it's just the way I view partnerships. So most people, in my opinion, get partners because of fear. They're fearful that they may not have what it takes to complete whatever business vision they have on their own. That, or they think it is the money that this other partner is bringing that can actually fulfill the dream. And a lot of times that's not true. A lot of times money is the last thing you need to fulfill your venture and can be a detrimental ingredient if it's introduced too early, and you can't make affordable mistakes if you have endless supplies of money. And what I mean by that is early on in my business journey, if I would have had access to, you know, $500,000 or $1 million, I could have found all the wrong ways to spend it on things that I thought were important at the time, but didn't have to really get nitty gritty into the needs list versus the wants list. And I would have misspent the money and probably failed a lot faster. So that's first and foremost. I think a lot of people take on partners based out of fear for the wrong reasons. Second thing is, when we talk about finding the right partner, being the right partner, is understanding what you both want to get out of the business relationship, as far as not only what the business represents for yourself, but where does you want to take the business and why you both want to do it. Some people are doing it for passion. Some people want to do it just for money. If you have that disconnect in the beginning, in my experience, it's going to widen the gap between the two partners. You're not going to come together later on. Your visions are usually going to grow in a direction that you started in and amplify in that direction. So if one person strictly is just doing it for the money and one person absolutely loves doing whatever it is that, you know, if you're opening a restaurant, they love to cook and that's their thing, you're generally going to get two partners that are have disassociation with a common goal.
That's
why I think that having you know, being on the same page as to what and why you're doing what you're doing is super important in the beginning.
Okay. So, all right. So I understand that, piece of it, but then you go on to say, because you kind of talk about aligning your goals and checking your ego. So, and I thought those are two interesting things to put together, is that the goal, aligning the goals and checking your ego and putting those two together. So help me resolve why those two things go together, I guess, and why that's so important to a successful partnership.
So for me early on, you know, I think it's based on experience and my own personal experience. And I can't speak to the female side of my partnership. But for me, as a young man, I had a very large ego. And I think egos are okay, as long as they're in the right timing, in the right moment, and they don't become arrogance and oppress others' situational circumstance due to your ego. So that was, for me, I had to learn that lesson the hard way. I realized if I started analyzing some of the things that I wanted to do within the company, especially when I brought Thor into the business as a partner, I realized that some of my decisions were based on my ego and not based on the business needs or the direction it is that we were trying to go. Maybe it was an interview or something. I'm just trying to think off the cuff of a good example, but maybe there was an interview or something that I've been doing on local TV or in a newspaper or magazine where I talked about the wrong things based on how I viewed myself in the role I was in the business, rather than talking about the business and how I could function and feed that business. So I think for me, removing my ego was an important lesson I had to learn early on, and might be for a lot of young entrepreneurs too. So the other thing is, because I have a woman as my partner, she doesn't necessarily have those ego trip ups like a man would commonly or more commonly have. So she was a little bit more pragmatic with her approach. Mm. So I think it's important not only be able to give up your ego, but also to recognize when ego is encroaching on the commonality or the goal that you're trying to achieve, and not insult the other person as you're trying to come to terms with what it is that needs to change. Dynamically, if somebody has a large ego that you're working with, there's ways to approach that. Is recognizing it first is the first thing, and then figuring out the right approach so that you're not insulting the partner or causing them to get angry with what, however it is you're trying to diffuse the ego. Mm-hmm. So that's first and foremost.
So I think one of the things that, you know, I talked about it a little bit in the introduction of you, but you know, you're in a band. You've been in several bands. And if there's ever a problem with goals and egos, I just tell people, just try to put a band together and see how see how goals and egos, if you want to see how that, because that's really tough. And by the way, I think a band as a petri dish of how partnerships can go wrong or right is a great way to look at business. Because don't you think, if you want to see the best of people working together and you want to see the worst of people working together, just have a good band and a bad band.
I think it's a great way to, you talked about segue into the partnerships comment. A band is an excellent example of business partnerships. A lot of people don't think of it that way, but I allude to it in the book as well. As you really do have a partnership when you're talking about a musical group. And for me, it was really the learning blocks of why partnerships, how partnerships could be successful and how they could be destroyed with a lack of a common vision. So, or at least an understanding of where everyone wanted to go with something. Cause in a band, you have four or five, sometimes six people all contributing to the direction of the ship. Mm. And if you have six people steering in different directions, you're going in a circle. You're not going straight. You're not moving forward. You're not growing. So that to me was one of the biggest life lessons on partnerships early on in my business career, was learning how to manage band and become a better band member within the confines you find yourself working in.
Yeah, I just think, you know, that when you talk about the word alignment, and we use this a lot in business, right? Business alignment. But I think, you know, making sure that you're so aligned up front, right? I mean, because sometimes we look for talent and which is why, again, I think putting a band together is so good. And listen, I'm a hack musician, but I've been in bands. But, you know, I think what happens is that, you know, we look for talent so often that we don't look for, you know, for having that alignment. And that alignment can go so much further than having great talent.
I agree 100%. I think if it were up to me to put a band together from start to start, I would look for the character and the human beings I'm getting together with first, and the goal. So what is the goal? Do we want to make good music? Do we want to make lots of money? Do we want to party? Do we want to, and none of those are the way I would view it. I would say, I want to make great music and have fun. And as long as I had other members that wanted to do the same thing, then I would probably be a great starting point for me, because I'm of the opinion that I can always help other people grow with musicianship and learn whatever craft it is and hone that in. Right. But if you start off with bad character, that's a tough thing. And I talk about it in the book as well. You know, I had a common goal with a couple of my partners, but I, you know, had bad character. So the bad character shows up when opportunity arises to steal or to do things that are unsavory in a business relationship. So I think that's really important, not only to have a common goal, but make sure that you have good character as well.
His name is Sean Dowdell, and the book is entitled Brand Renegades, Our Fearless Path, From Startup to Global Brand. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, I have two great sponsors. One of them is Epic Physical Therapy. They are, in fact, my physical therapists. Look, they work with professional athletes. They work with people who have recovered from surgery or an injury. They work with people who are just, you know, just want to move and feel better. Listen, I'm just going to tell you something. They will provide you with a customized treatment plan for you, because they recognize that they need to treat the whole entire body as a functional whole, not just their symptoms or your injury. When you're ready for your epic relief, epic recovery, epic results, go to Epic Physical Therapy. That's EPICPT.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, for over 35 years, they have been at the top of the real estate game, helping people all over the world. How did they do it without being a national brand? How did they do that without being affiliated with a national company? They created relationships, and they made sure that they were going to maintain those relationships year after year, week after month, week after week, day after day. And that's what it takes. And that's why they're still at the top of their game 35 years later. So when you're ready to sell your home, buy your home, start with the relationship makers, the relationship maintainers. Start with Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindakraft.com. That's LindaKraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Sean Dowdell, author, co-author, I should say. I don't want to short Thor on this, but A Brand Renegades is the book. It's available bookstores near you and Amazon. Get yourself a copy. I'm just telling you, they have created an amazing brand and have done something so powerful that can apply to any business. We're in the middle of talking about good partnerships, bad partnerships, and as we've gotten started here. But I want to continue down this road, because this was actually a question asked to me from a listener about partnerships. And I want to talk about this, and you alluded to it a little bit. One of the things you talk about is avoid complacency, prioritize communication, and control your demons. Again, Sean, these are things that we don't see in a lot of business books, but those three things, avoid, the first one is one that we very rarely see, avoiding complacency. And the third one, control your demons. We talk about communication a lot, but those, the front, the book ends of those things. Let's talk about those a little bit when it comes to partnerships.
So complacency is something I've never really had an issue with. So, but I see it in a lot of individuals that I've been around, not only in business, but in music and in life in general. You see people, and I'm not talking about the general understanding of complacency, where people mistake complacency with content. Mm-hmm. And it's two different things. I'm very happy with where I am, but I also am not complacent in where I am, where I want to go. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to understand why those are different. So am I happy with the effort I'm putting forth? Yes. Do I need to work harder? Yes. And I think that that's really ingrained in me as a human being, is always what's the next step? Not to the detriment of where I am now, because I think it's important to recognize where you're at and be where you are and be present, be aware. Those things are important, but also I like to plan and I like to think about the future, and I like to create. So for me, I've never really had an issue with being complacent, but some of the partners I have, they just, you know, we do something very successful and they just want to tap out and they want to live off that. That's never been my gig. I've always wanted to write the next record or write the next book or open the next store. So that's what we talk about as far as complacency. In my opinion, it's a business killer, because if you're not continually growing your business and thinking about the next step, and I'm not always talking about expansion and right. I talk about growth,
right.
I'm talking about growth as far as your community outreach is, you know, as far as, you know, your aesthetics of your business, the intricacies of the internal staffing, all of the components that make your business better, what it is, making those things better, that's growth, internal growth. So applying those concepts is always important to me. And I think that if you're not doing that, your competitors are doing that and they will catch you and they will put you out of business. It just, it's the nature of business. When you look at the several hundred year history of our country, it's a great example, because you don't see a lot of brands that have been around for the test of time. There's very few of them,
right?
If any, that have been around for 100 plus years, because business models not only change, the fact that they're not adapting and growing is why those businesses eventually go out of business.
And this is the thing. I think when you talk about complacency, I think this is one of the things that really captured me. A lot of times people, when they become a quote unquote business partner, they just all of a sudden just go, I think we made it. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And they just think, okay, we have a business, you know, and I think there's people out there who really do believe that when you own your own business, you're just rolling in dough, right? Which you and I both know that is just not how it works. Matter of fact, when you first start a business, you have to work so much harder than everyone else does. But I think some people, partners, get into this, and I've seen this with partnerships where the person said, okay, well, I have this title of owner and I don't need to do anything else. Right. I mean, that's kind of the complacency you're talking about, I think.
100%. You know, I mean, I talk about it in the book with Thor as well. We talk about being better leaders and not bosses. And that's a boss mentality of what you're talking about.
Right.
Where they put that, you know, the title of owner on their business card. And next thing you know, they want to, work 2 days a week. And they think delegating is being an owner. And that's not what it is. Knowing how to delegate is important. But being willing to do what everybody else is doing and then some is what makes you a powerful leader.
God, that's powerful. Man, that's powerful.
Thank you. It's just really how we've designed our business. We always are willing to do more. I still work 60, 70 hours a week. Not every week, but I still work 60 hours a week on average. I love what I do. So therefore, it doesn't feel like grueling work to me. Right. It's just something that I get a kick out of. And every really super successful entrepreneur that I've been around has the same mentality that I do. When it comes to work, they don't feel like it's work. It's just what they love doing. And it just happens to be in business. So the other thing that happens that you talked about, I want to mention, is a lot of times when I do public speaking, you have a very broad audience demographic, and I'll have one or two people that'll come up to me and inevitably ask the question, you know, well, how can I get into business? You know, I want to own a business so I don't have to work as hard. And I'm really brutally honest, Jay. I say, you probably shouldn't be a business owner if that's the way you're thinking. Because right. Business entrepreneurs are the only people that are crazy enough to quit a 40-hour work week so that we can work for ourselves at 60 or 70 hours. That's really the mental math that you have to understand. And if you don't get that, don't start, because you're probably going to fail. Most businesses fail.
Yeah.
And there's also a recipe for failure too, that you can really, if you analyze most businesses that fail, you can go through the steps of why they failed. It's not generally a market issue. It's generally an entrepreneur issue, right. In my opinion, with small businesses.
What did you mean when you said, you said avoid complacency, prioritize communication? We talk about communication all the time, but what about controlling your demons? What did you mean by that and your partnerships?
A lot of people have bad habits they bring into the partnerships.
Got it.
It was my temper. Controlling my demons was not understanding. You can get angry at certain things, but I think for me, and I'm still learning this, by the way, I'm a human and I have many faults.
There's
an old adage, I guess, that's popping into my mind right now is don't kill the messenger. Well, I used to have a habit of my temper getting really upset when someone would tell me news that was bad. You know, the faucet is exploded at one of the stores, or or, you know, our insurance dropped you for whatever reason, I would get really upset at the person delivering the message. And that, and that's a horrible way to run a business. And to become a better leader for my, for me, I had to understand that you talked about early controlling your emotions, right, but also digesting whatever information was coming in and letting the person know that it's okay to give me bad information. That's a lesson I had to learn for myself. Was I think for a short period of my business ownership life, I had people that didn't want to give me bad news because I didn't take it well. And that's a horrible way to run a business as a leader. So I had to ensure that my team knew that they could trust me with giving me that type of information, that I wasn't going to get upset with them for telling the truth. Because without that, you're the emperor with no clothes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I
Nobody gives you that information. So, and that was something I had to learn probably in the early 2000s, where, you know, back to that ego conversation and back to controlling your demons, where I had to really reel myself back and understand these people were just trying to help. And, right, and by me getting upset at the information they were giving me, I was misdirecting my emotions, misdirecting my anger, and certainly not helping the situation.
Yeah. I have a history, and I have had to learn to control it over the years of having a bit of a temper myself. And I've had to learn to just, you know, you've got to stop this. I mean, seriously. I mean, it was to the point where I was disgusted with me.
I can see it in your face, Jay. You and I have had that same internal conversation with ourselves. We're going, this isn't who I want to be.
This isn't who I want to be.
This is not how the leaders that I look up to act, behave, and think. So why am I doing this? I had to redirect the way I was handling myself.
Did you have that moment where you looked at yourself in the mirror and you didn't even want to look at yourself in the mirror because you were embarrassed about what you saw?
Oh, a few times, of course.
Right. I mean, I think that's the thing when you talk about controlling your demons that spoke to me so deeply, was I've had those moments where I've looked in the mirror and have just said, I don't want to be this person, and I am not this person deep down, and needed to change.
The fact that you're accountable that way, I mean, I think, you know, you get these business books and everything they've ever done is all shiny, great. And they've never had failures. And I think that I call BS on that.
Right.
And I've failed a lot. I've failed much more than I've succeeded. And I've been a jerk many times, and I've had to reset myself so that I could continue in the path that I wanted to go, not on the path that I was on. And holding yourself accountable is one of the only ways you're truly going to get internal growth.
Yeah. I think that's what resonated so strongly with me. Now, I never threw paper towels at anyone, at my wife, as far as I know. At least she's never said I've thrown paper towels. But I have said things that were probably much worse than that. I probably would have been better off if I'd thrown the paper towels at her rather than some of the things I've said. And when we were working together. And so, I mean, it just, you know, it's one of those things that I just thought was really powerful, is that we have to learn to control our own demons. And I thought that was really a cool thing. And you were very vulnerable and honest about that. And I appreciate that. One of the other things you talk about is in partnerships is watch for early signs of trouble. What are those signs, and what should we be looking for in our partnerships when it comes to, you know, the early signs?
So one is, you have to understand your numbers in a business. I don't care what business you're in. You have to be able to not be obsessive about the money, but understand where the money is going, who's in charge of it, what's being written out. I've had partners in the past that would write themselves checks when they got low on personal funds. And that's not okay. That's stealing. And so that was an early sign in one of my partnerships. You know, the other partner just feeling justified to take money out of the business because they were having personal financial failures and felt like they could lean on our company to bail them out of their personal situation. So that's one. Two is work ethic. You know, that goes back to the first things we were talking about is, do you want to be a better partner? One of the things that makes you a better partner in all of the cases for myself, and I've had many partnerships, is my ability to rise to the occasion and want to work hard. And usually your partner will feed off of that.
Right.
If you have a partner that's not on the same level work ethic wise, that's usually a sign for trouble, right? And it's easy to recognize, at least in my business ventures, you'll have a partner that may or may not want to show up, you know, to work on whatever it is in the business and on the business the same way you do. So those are things that you need to watch out for and make sure, you know, once again, that comes back to, and it's all a pyramid of building blocks of how your partnership is going to work. Is what's the work ethic? Do you have those common goals? If you have common goals, most likely you have the common work ethic and the direction and the foresight of how you're going to get to those goals together. If one of those partners is opting out, those are usual ways to find things that aren't working in the partnership.
I think there's something that you're really, really clear about, because when you talk about one formula for a successful partnership, you talk about work ethic versus work style. The two of you have good work ethic, great work ethic, but your working style is maybe a little different. You know what I mean? Where yeah. your style of work is different. Because I know that my wife and I have two different styles of work, right? My wife is, we're both hard workers, but my wife is one of those people who, if she starts it, she's on it until it is done. I'm one of those people who work hard, right? But then I stop for a second because I'm like going, okay, whoa. I got to stop. I got to give myself a little bit of a respite and kind of clear my mind and then go back into it and work hard, right? So I'm kind of when I write my books, it's kind of an inspiration thing. When that inspiration hits, you cannot stop me and don't interrupt me. But then there are times when it stops, I stop and kind of let my mind refresh. They're both hard work. It's just that they're done in a different style. And I think that you make a real distinction between those two successfully, that we kind of have to understand those differences as well. Did I hit that right?
100%. I don't know how much more I could even add to that, because almost the work dynamic that you share, that you and your wife have, in the way that you approach things, my wife and I have a very similar process, or dissimilar process, I should say, is, right. You know, I'm a more of a type A, where if I say I'm going to write a book, I literally lock myself in my office and I type out, and the inspiration does come and go. It ebbs and flows, and you get more done some days than others, but I'll tend to try to be a little bit more linear in my thought process. My wife is a little bit more nonlinear, and she takes an approach of sometimes what I feel is like not the most efficient way of doing something, but that's her process. And she'll, you know, that's one of the things that was the hardest thing for me, was just understanding that this is something she's working on. She has her own process to get to the end result. She knows the deadline. She knows the goal. I need to step back and let her work through that the way she does. And when I do that, she ends up coming up with a better end result every single time. And that's just what's conditioned me to respect the process and respect her lane, let her work the way she works. And likewise for her with me. So sometimes we'll joke about it. Our approach to a certain problem, she'll go, well, I want to do it this way. And I'll say, well, go ahead and do it that way. I want to do it this way. And then we'll both come back to each other. And most of the time, you know, given this situation, we'll have something really similar, but we got there two very different ways.
Right. I just think that was so cool in your relationship. And you know, you talk about, you know, having the ability to relinquish the leadership to each other in different situations, right? You talk about the willingness to share the risks, responsibilities, and accountability, and then learning to let each other do what they do best in the way they do it best. I just, you know, you even said, stay in your lane and honor your partner's roles. I thought that was really, really, really cool. But I think the most powerful thing that you said, and you said it twice, you said it at the beginning, but you said it at the very end, you said a true partnership is when your goal becomes not to find the perfect partner, but to become a better partner. And I got that advice when I got married, a friend of mine said to me, Jay, stop looking for the perfect person and become the perfect person. And that really resonated strongly with me, because it's the same thing is true, isn't it? In the partnership, relationship, and business, right? It's
partnership is a marriage in certain ways.
Yeah.
For me, you know, very specifically, it is a marriage. But in many ways, general partnerships are a marriage, and it's very much the same. Is if you always want to try to be better or add value, in other terms, when we talk about it at different points of the book, mm-hmm. or if you can become better in your approach and your partnership and the way you do things, you'll it transcends to your partnership. They want to become a better partner. They want to work harder. They want to do better. And it just becomes this great team together when you can both do that. So you're exactly right. Don't try to look for the perfect partner. Try to be a better partner. And that road to perfection is the journey. It's not a static goal that you're ever going to reach. It's always room for improvement. So always try to find how to make yourself better and be better in your relationships.
I love it. His name is Sean Dadel. The book is entitled Brand Renegades. Did I tell you he was just brilliant and awesome? I told you, didn't I? Man, he just gave us, if you're looking to partner up with somebody, he just gave you not only tips and advice to partner up in business, he also gave you some tips how to be successful in marriage. You're listening to him right here on A New Direction. Folks, Epic Physical Therapy, they offer the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, including the Alter-G anti-gravity treadmill, the Normatec compression sleeves, Game Ready. That's just a few of the things that they do. They are trained, certified, in the most comprehensive cutting-edge treatments available right now, blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping, and those are just a few. Look, they are at the bleeding edge when it comes to physical therapy. They work with professional athletes. They work with common people like you and me, right? So listen, people come from all over the world to see them. I just think that you need to start your journey when it comes to your physical therapy with Epic Physical Therapy. When you're ready for your Epic Relief, Epic Recovery, and Epic Results, go to epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, you know what her clients and customers call her? The legend of customer service. And why is that? You know, why would her clients and customers call her the legend of customer service? Because she has found a way to stay in touch with them on a regular basis. Sean talks about, you know your touch points in his book, Brand Renegades. Know where your touch points are. And every place that a client can contact with you is a touch point. And Linda has, in 35 years, has understood how to really pay attention to the places where she has touched and she can touch back. And that's why she is known as the relationship maker and the relationship maintainer of when it comes to real estate. So when you're ready to sell your home, buy a home, start with Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. They've been doing it successfully for 35 years. So you know what? Just go to lindacraft.com. It's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Sean Dadel and his book that him and his wife authored, The Brand Renegades. Fabulous book. And if you've listened to the first half of the show, you already know that everything that he said, it applies to not just your business and life. And it's really cool. Chapter four, understand it's your, you entitled, it's your customer's experience, not yours. Understand the customer's journey and three stages. And you talk about awareness, consideration, and decision. So let's talk about when we're building our business and we're building our brand, because it does start with the customer, because without customers, we don't have a business. So let's talk about this customer journey and why that, how you were able to infuse that into your business and why that's so important to the business entrepreneur.
So when we started really looking at who our customers were, we started to get an understanding of why they were searching us out, not just for the product. It's not just some, so in our business, we own a company called Club Tattoo, and it's a luxury tattoo and piercing studio, right?
Right.
So millions of people every day are looking for tattoos. Why are they looking for tattoos? Is it an emotional connection? Are they looking for stellar artwork? Are they looking for the cheapest tattoo? So we had to figure out where, and our initial touch point is the awareness of the client, right? Why were they searching us out? And we had to make some decisions on who we wanted to be, because you can't be everything to all people. And that was a tough lesson for us to learn. On the awareness side, is what does our brand say to potential clients? And what we were was an upscale tattoo and piercing studio. So our price points were a little elevated. Our customer's experience was going to be a little bit elevated. The aesthetics of the studio were elevated. So what those clients grew to expect as they were coming in for whatever service it was they were looking for, they already had a predetermined notion of what it was they were going to get. One thing that we weren't was the cheapest. So we had to make a real hard line in the sand to let our clients know that we were not going to be the cheapest. And when people came in and said, well, the shop up the street would do this for $50. And we said, I'm sorry, well, you might want to go there and get it done and we'll be here for your future needs. That was hard to digest. Let potential business walk out of the store if they weren't willing to pay for what your value was. So that was really where we were coming forward. The awareness side of this is you have a client that's searching for a specific use, service, product, whatever that is. Here we are in the spectrum. They have choices. Why do they want to choose you? You have to let your clients know who you are, what you do, why you're doing it, and the experience that they're going to get if they choose you. So you have to give them a reason to choose you. You know, proximity, that's always, you know, you could be the gas station on the corner that someone happens to be driving by. That's a business that's going to fall in your lap, maybe. But actually getting the client to make you a destination point and search you out, that starts with the awareness of what you are, who you are, and what you're going to provide as the customer experience. What are they going to expect before they ever get to you where you're at? What is your reputation? Do you put out a good product? So these are all things that we had to start thinking about in the way we marketed ourselves and the way we reached out to our clients.
I just, you know, you just said a whole bunch of things in a very short space, but I think one of the things that really stood out to me, and I think this is a hard thing for, you know, people who are starting a business or even people who've been in business a long time, is know your value, right? I mean, what is your, you said it, you know, you
and don't apologize for it,
right?
Don't apologize for having a high standard, a high value set on yourself.
Right.
That's a lot of, you know, I've walked into businesses before and the person selling you whatever is, let's say we're in Louis Vuitton or something, or maybe that's a bad example, but another brand where the person selling you something apologizes for the price. I'm sorry, I know it's expensive. Mm. Don't ever apologize. Either your brand is worth it or it's not. Mm. That's the start point. And if you've established that it's worth it, if you're trying to gouge people, that's a different mindset. That's not where I go. That's not how I do my business model with my partners and my businesses. But once you've established your price point, your value, don't ever apologize for it. You have to educate your clients as to why you are that price. What is your justification for that price point? And it doesn't start off with an apology. It's, we have this price because we offer this service. We have this type of sterilization. We have this type of experience. And this is the type of product you're going to get when you purchase from my company. This is the guarantee you're going to get. We're going to stand behind what it is that we do. So there's inherent value, not only in the physical product, but in the customer experience.
Mm. You know, I have to tell you something, because value is a word that you use in this book a few times, because you also say about value, and here's the other thing, is not just your own value of what you know, your own value, but it is this constant, I don't know if it's an obsession, maybe it is, but it almost sounded like you're obsessed with figuring out, how do I continue to add value? I mean, that seemed like almost an obsession for you and Thora, that it continues, right? What can we do? What's the next thing we can do to add value?
I think that stems from an early chip on my shoulder, so to speak. You know, when I was coming into we spoke right before the interview about, you know, dealing with a lot of suits or bankers or investment, you know, venture capital people. And early on, you know, just dealing with landlords was a hurdle for tattoo studios. You had landlords that just viewed you as this low end, unintelligent, biker-esque kind of dirty, dingy business concept, when clearly they didn't understand what we were trying to do. That wasn't who we were. But when they thought tattoo shop, they thought tattoo parlor, seedy, gross. Right. And I had this enormous hurdle to even get a meeting with some of these people. And I think that's where this adding value thing started from, was how can I make this person understand that I'm not just going to be a rent payer? I'm not just going to be somebody sucking off the location. I'm going to bring people to this center. I'm going to bring clients. I'm going to add value to what it is this person already has. What they have already has value to me, but I don't want to just take from that. I want to actually be able to give back and create a larger, more expanded value view. So that's really, I think, where it comes from. It might be a little bit earlier in my development, maybe in the music world, where, you know, we had to add value in different venues or different bills to get on certain shows. But I've always had that mentality. And I think you're right. It probably is some type of an underlying obsession that I have at this point, because I also find it interesting. If you can have that unique perspective of adding value into different relationships, I think you take people off guard, and also you can kind of come up with new ideas in whatever relationship that is. And we talk about it in the book where we did this deal with Bicycle and did a deal with Auster and did a deal with some of these really high-end properties around the world. And I think having that mentality has served our brand well.
Right. Yeah, I just, you know, it's kind of interesting what you just said there, you know, is that what you decided to do was, instead of getting mad at those people who questioned, you know, what you were doing, you just added value. You said, I'm going to show you how much value is going to happen here, right?
Well, all fairness, I did get mad too. But if I'm being honest, I did get mad, but you figure out real quick, getting mad doesn't do anything to solve the problem in front of you, right? It's not getting, the more mad you get doesn't make the other person relinquish whatever it is they feel or think about you. You have to, all right, how am I going to rise to the occasion and help change their thought process about who and what we are? And that's really where I had to start setting the ego aside and control your demons. All those things that we talked about early really came into play under those dynamic situations, trying to get into a certain property or trying to develop a certain product with a company. You know, I had to deal with chemical companies. I dealt with, you know, creating patents. You have some pretty big hurdles when you're in those arenas, especially if you're not used to dealing with people like that, and especially if they don't understand what it is you're doing, why you're doing it. So you have to come at it from a different angle and try to get them to understand you a little bit easier.
Let's talk about, you spend a lot of time talking about this one concept. I think it's really important to new entrepreneurs, but I think it's even to seasoned entrepreneurs. And I'm going to just pull this little section out of it here. It's called Find Your Niche, Then Double Down. Talk about that.
Okay, that's a wide topic. But for us, we had to define who it was or who we were and who our clients were. We couldn't please everybody. So a great example was early on, probably mid-2000s, 2003, 2004, we had a varying price points in different the body jewelry that we were selling. So we had some clients that would come in and they would spend $20 on a piece of jewelry. And we had a few pieces that were $200 or $300. Well, we figured out that we weren't selling many of the $200 or $300 pieces because we had such a selection of the lower end pieces that looked similar but weren't quite at the same quality level. So we had to undertake, okay, who do we want to be? Do we want to service a higher end clientele? Maybe sell less volume, but do higher ticket items and have a better quality selection of what it is we're offering, rather than trying to be all things to all people, offering a lower end and a higher end. You confuse your client by trying to do too many different things. And we really had to double down on, okay, this is the direction we're going to go. My wife and I invested a ton of money, $1 million or so, into the look and feels of our studios, making sure that the visual aesthetic was absolutely at a premium and separating ourselves from our other competition and distancing ourselves from that lower end client. And it's not a dig on those clients. We just couldn't service all of them. So our niche was a higher end, luxury minded clientele, somebody that wanted to go after a Louis Vuitton bag or a Tiffany bracelet or stay at the Wynn or stay at the Palazzo or stay at the Venetian. It wasn't for us. It was no longer the Excalibur client or the Hilton client. And it wasn't an insult to those clients. We just couldn't service all of them. So the moment we decided that this is who we were going to be, this is the box. We're not going to try to cover 100% of the spectrum. We're going to cover 15% of that spectrum, and we're going to be the best in that arena. Our profits went through the roof. Our gross revenues went through the roof. We started getting a very educated client because they knew exactly what it was they were going to get from us before they walked in the door, not only through reputation, but our visual marketing platform. Everything that we were putting out into the ether spoke exactly with a united message that told the customer who and what we were before they ever walked through the door.
You know, something, you have done an amazing job with Club Tattoo. I mean, certainly you've had some, the celebrities that come to your, you've created a beautiful niche, right? I mean, people, I don't understand, but Blake Shelton comes comes in Miranda Lambert, comes in Miley Cyrus. You have was it Amari Stoudemire? Is that one of them that comes in? Did I get that right? And so you got
Johnny.
Yeah,
a lot of people come into the studio, a lot of actors, and Chrissy Metz, and you can name off hundreds of musicians that have been ties back to musical arena. But you created
that. I mean, that's the niche that you created. Here's the thing, and I really want people to understand it, that what you're talking about in this book, again, the book's called Brand Renegades, is that, I think we get worried that we're going to, we want to be all things to all people because we don't want to give up business. But you heard Sean just say, you got to find out what you are, and your customers have to be clear on what you are, and you have to do that. Sean, we've been on an hour.
Nice.
It has gone so fast, brother. I'm just telling you, it has really gone fast for me. I have thoroughly enjoyed my time with you. I just want to let you know. And I've really enjoyed this book, Brand Renegades, Our Fearless Path from Startup to Global Brand. Please let Thora know that I'm grateful for everything that she contributed to this book as well. So the show is called A New Direction, as you know. And the reason why we call it A New Direction is because we try to help people find a new direction in success in their lives, career, or business. If you could leave people with a new direction based on your book, Brand Renegades, what would be a new direction you would leave to the listener based on your book?
Ooh, man, that's a loaded question. The first thing that pops in my mind is follow your passion. I think a lot of people do things because it's putting food on the table. It's serving a financial need in their life, but it's not what they love doing. Find your passion and go all in on it. And I think you'll be more successful than you realize.
His name is Sean Dowdell. The book is entitled Brand Renegades. Folks, pick it up. It's great. Again, available Amazon bookstores near you. I'm going to have a write-up of the show with back links to the book and to Sean that you will be able to find him. Listen, he is really... He may be called a tattooed millionaire, but he's extraordinarily accessible. And I have found him to be incredibly generous. And he's also been so kind to me. And I know he will do the same thing for you because that's just who they are. They love giving back. And so I'm really grateful for them. And we did not get into hardly anything into this book, but I'm just telling you that they talk about mentorship, what a good mentor is and what a good mentee is. There's just so much to go. We could do 3 or 4 shows just on some of the topics of the book. So maybe we'll have to have Sean come back. Folks, it's the show. Listen, here's the thing. You're in control of 2 things at all times, and that is your attitude and your effort. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. It doesn't matter what's happening in your life. It doesn't matter what's going on in your life. You always can control your attitude and your effort. So take control of them. I didn't say it was easy, but it's going to be worth it. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest, another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as I say to you every week, and you know what that is, Shalom.
A new direction, a brand new day. A new direction, things are going to change. You can find the strength to go a different way. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry anymore. A new direction.